gitu. Who remembers something from all the way back 2 classes ago? That's almost impossible, isn't it? I'll give you a hint. It was about Lord Chaitanya. In the particular book we're reading. Anyone remember the name of the book? Hey, yeah. Very good. Remember what verse we were speaking about? Because out of the verses, we're going over Prabhupada's introductory lectures. And we heard about the first 2 verses and the 3rd verse and the special gifts of Lord Chaitanya. I'll read this paragraph that will catch us up to the point where we're up to, which is the 4th verse. There are different stages of devotional service and God realization. Strictly speaking, anyone who accepts the existence of God is situated in devotional service. To acknowledge that God is great is something, but not much. Lord Chaitanya preached as an acharya, a great teacher. Preaching as an acharya is a great teacher. Taught that we can enter into a relationship with God and actually become God's friend, parent, or lover. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna showed Arjuna his universal form because Arjuna was his very dear friend. So this is Lord Chaitanya's special gift leading up to the 4th verse. He's showing the degree that it is possible to actually have a relationship with Krishna, with God, to such a degree. And then one understands the material world as a reflection of the spiritual world and the relationships that we seek in the material world as really as simply reflections of the relationships that it is possible to have with Krishna. So Arjuna, Krishna showed Arjuna his universal form. Why? Yes, but what reason? But that's the external reason. But why? Just like, say, if I say, "Okay, Krishna, show me your universal form." Notice that there's no universal form right now. So, what inspired Krishna? So, the external reason, or the teaching reason, was that, as you said, that so people would, in the future, they if someone is claiming to be God. Well, the Supreme, this is the criteria. You have to be able to show a universal form. But why did Krishna do this with Arjuna? Why, when Arjuna said, Senayo ubiyor madye stapam ratayame tuta, please drive my chariot in the midst of both the armies. Remember, we're talking about Krishna, the Supreme. Universes coming from his skin holes, the supreme controller, the supreme absolute truth, the actual only entity who knows reality as it is. And yet, he showed Arjuna the universal form in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. In the 10th chapter, at the end of the 10th chapter, Krishna says to Arjuna, that by a single fragment of myself I pervade and support the entire universe. And the 11th chapter says, I want to see that form of you by which you actually do that. And Krishna says, okay, because you're my what? You're my dear friend, as Prabhupada says here. Because you are my dear friend, a friend, someone who is in a very deep relationship with another person when they ask something, how could he say no? And therefore you always see in Chaitanya Charitamrita quite astoundingly when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, He wants to go to South India. He wants to go to Jagannath Puri after taking sannyas, and Advaita Acharya says, just stay for another week or 10 days, another few more days, just stay. And Mahaprabhu has to stay because of the depth of Advaita Acharya's love. And then later on, Mahaprabhu, after going to South India and changing the heart of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, after going to Jagannath Puri, then he says, I want to go to South India. And all the devotees say, just stay a few more days, stay a few more days. And Mahaprabhu stays a few more days. Later he wants to go to Vrindavan, and they keep him for a whole year. Just stay to the next festival, stay to the next festival, stay to the next festival, stay to the next festival. And then Mahaprabhu finally says, after a whole year passes like that, he says, okay, you've been tricking me for so long, now I want to go. And then they say, you are the supreme independent, supreme personality of Godhead. Your will is independent. You will do as you like. So of course you can go. But yes, for the last year they were controlling him. Even though all along he was the supreme independent, absolute personality of Godhead. But they were controlling him, manipulating him. And he obviously, if he knows everything, so he also knew that they were doing that to him, certainly. But yet he became controlled by the devotees. Why? Why did Krishna show Arjuna the universal form when Arjuna requested it? And the answer is because Arjuna was his very dear friend. Very dear friend means they were engaging in transcendental rasa or transcendental love. They had a loving relationship. Is that upstairs or downstairs? It's just competition, but maybe now's not the time for transcendental competition. Maybe we can make it a little bit lower. Oh, it's coming. It's because it's coming out of here, coming through here.
Window to window.
Yeah. Direct window to window. So Mahaprabhu, again, his preaching as an acharya, a great teacher, he taught that we can enter into a relationship with God and actually becomes God's friend, parent, or lover. This is unique. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna showed Arjuna his universal form because Arjuna was his very dear friend. Upon seeing Krishna as the Lord of the universes, however, Arjuna asked Krishna to forgive the familiarity of his friendship. Lord Chaitanya goes beyond this point. So that means that if one is aware of the opulences and power of the Supreme Lord that inhibits the intimacy, so that means that one of the relationship, so that means that there has to be some degree of forgetfulness on the devotee's part for him to enter into the intimacy of the relationship. And this degree, and this forgetfulness facilitates intimacy. So therefore, and Krishna wants the intimacy more than the awe and reverence, so therefore Krishna's internal energy, his yoga maya, covers the living, a pure living entity's consciousness of Krishna's position. So it covers the consciousness. So that's a completely different function than when the material energy, Maya, covers a living entity's, Mahamaya covers a living entity's awareness of Krishna's position. This is a completely different functioning. Both this covering and indeed the living, every living entity must be under the control of another energy. Every jiva soul must be under Krishna's marginal tattvastha shakti. Because we are tiny, we must be under the influence of another energy, a superior, more powerful energy. It is unavoidable. And this is the illusion that both the internal energy and the external energy of Krishna, the Yogamaya and the Mahamaya, they give, they allow the living entities to always think that they are independent. Just as now we're thinking, just see my power, I'm going to move my hand, I'm going to do this, I'm thinking this, I'm going to control that, I'm going to I have so many plans, I'm going to fulfill them, and tomorrow I'm going to do this. And we're all thinking, or I'm thinking, that I'm the one who's doing it. So this is the power of Mahamaya that makes me think like that. So in the spiritual world, when the pure, loving, living entities wish to serve Krishna in a particular way, they also similarly, under the influence of Yogamaya, think that I'm the doer, I'm doing this, I'm going to give this to Krishna, I'm going to do that for Krishna, I'm now going to do this for Krishna. In under Yogamaya, because the living entities are pure, they're covered and they're forgetting Krishna's position, as Prabhupada will say, or maybe, I can't remember if it will say it or has said it, Mother Yasoda is thinking, Krishna, eat, you're going to get sick, you're going to die if you don't eat. So she's forgetting Krishna's position, but her center is pleasing Krishna, and the living entity under Mahamaya is forgetting Krishna's position. Who cares about Krishna? But his consciousness is thinking, is self-centered, thinking himself, of himself. But both consciousnesses, where I'm thinking I'm the doer, I'm the one who's doing it, I'm going to feed Krishna, I'm going to make $1,000,000,000. These are both completely facilitated by Maya, by the Krishna's energy. We cannot do anything without Krishna's energy. We are dependent, whether we like it or not. We are dependent completely. And soon as we think, an illusion means when we think we're independent. We think we're independent. But actually it is illusion, because our relationship with Krishna can never be cut, because he is the absolute truth. This is how big he is, how all-inclusive he is. We cannot cut our relationship with him. We have it. And it's just a matter of turning towards him. Now we are Krishna Bahyamukh. We have turned our back on Krishna, and therefore when the sun, if we have our back to the sun, when we look forward, what do we see? Shadow. Our own shadow. And that's what we're seeing. Yes, there is a relationship between us and our shadow. But we're not actually seeing ourselves. We're not actually seeing the actual substance of ourselves. So when we turn to Krishna and acknowledge our relationship with him, that is what bhakti means. In the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, one of the 9 yogendras, who is a son the yogendras, their sons of either Rishabdev or Bharat Maharaj or...
No, Rishabdev.
Huh?
Rishabdi.
So he says, Dvayam Bhayam Dviti Abhinavesha Tasyat Ishad Apetasya Vaparyato Smriti. He explains that Bhayam, what does Bhayam mean?
Fear.
What is the cause? Bhayam Dvitiya. Thinking, abhinavesha tachya, it means thinking, in terms of duality, that we are that something, anything, especially ourselves, are separate from Krishna. This is fear's essential cause, and fear will not go away until we deal with it at the root, until we turn towards Krishna fully. And in that stage of duality, turn away from Krishna, we experience fear. But not only do we experience fear, viparyato smriti, we see everything topsy-turvy, everything upside down. We don't have a correct perspective of reality, because reality means seeing Krishna connected with everything, and illusion means seeing everything as separate from Krishna, not seeing Krishna's hand in anything. So what's the cure of this is very, very simple. Turning back to our original actual relationship with Krishna, our natural actual relationship with Krishna as dependent, loving souls in relationship with Krishna. And that is called devotional service. Both the process and the result is called devotional service. And this concept is the essence of what religion means. Turning back to Krishna, turning towards Krishna again, as our shelter in every religion. This is really the essence. It is bhakti. So Islam means literally surrender. That's what Islam means. In the Jewish religion, they talk about what is the 23rd Psalm? Something about entering into the valley of death, thy rod and staff. They comfort me. Go ahead. You know the rest of it. You haven't probably said it in a while. The part that I was specifically interested in, thy rod and thy staff that comfort me. This is the support. There's no other real support in this way. Yes. Yes. And rods and staffs are meant to be leaned upon. And they support, they strengthen. Huh? Yes, that's where it starts. That means if he's the shepherd, that means we are the sheep. And don't say ba.
And sheep, evidently, somebody's taking care of sheep, or creatures taking care of sheep. They're notoriously stupid.
Yes.
Yes.
They aren't just
nice woolly animals for fur, for coats, for sweaters. They're really stupid.
So we turn to Krishna and awaken our relationship with him, and that we have to be covered, because that's our nature, because we are tiny. So Arjuna asked Krishna to forgive the familiarity of his friendship, because his Aishwarya Gyan, his knowledge of Krishna's powers overshadow the depth of Arjuna's affection. But Lord Chaitanya, Prabhupada explains here, goes beyond this point. Through Lord Chaitanya, we can become friends with Krishna, and there will be no limit to this friendship. We can become friends of Krishna not in awe or adoration, but in complete freedom. We can even relate to God as his father or mother. This is the philosophy not only of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, but of Srimad Bhagavatam as well. There are no other scriptures in the world in which God is treated as the son of a devotee. Usually God is seen as the almighty father who supplies the demands of his sons. And that is required that is required to understand how, as the son should accept his dependence on his father, similarly we should accept our dependence on Krishna. But that is not the end or the final limit of love. That is the beginning. Because in that mood, as Prabhupada will explain, when God is the father, he's the one whose business is to supply bread. And it's taking, so it's still self-centered. So the love is somewhat, it is not developed to the fullest degree. It is wonderful, actually, and never to be criticized, but yet it has to be seen to be not developed to the fullest degree. So Lord Chaitanya is going beyond this point. We can even relate to God as his father or mother. This is the philosophy not only of Chaitanya Charitamrita, but of Srimad Bhagavatam as well. There are no other scriptures in the world in which God is treated as the son of a devotee. Usually, God is seen as the Almighty Father who supplies the demands of his sons. The great devotees, however, sometimes treat God as a son in their execution of devotional service. The son demands, and the father and mother supply. And in supplying Krishna, the devotee becomes like a father or a mother. Instead of from God, taking from God, we give to God. It was in this relationship that Krishna's mother Yasoda told the Lord, "Here, eat this or you'll die. Eat nicely." In this way, Krishna, although the proprietor of everything, depends on the mercy of his devotee. This is a uniquely high level of friendship in which the devotee actually believes himself to be the father or mother of Krishna. So what causes him to believe himself the father or the mother of Krishna? So on one level, we say, yogamaya, because it makes the living entity to forget that Krishna is the almighty, all-powerful source of universes. It makes him forget that. Okay, but let's look at it on another level. What makes the living entity see God as a son and think that if I don't feed you, you're not going to survive?
It's constitutional nature.
Okay, but
intense love.
Yeah, his desire for love. Yeah, his intense desire. And that intense desire, and this is really explained in a very wonderful way in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, the 11th chapter, in the last few verses, if you remember that, where Krishna enters Dwarka after leaving Hastinapur, and he greets the residents of Dwarka, and then he greets all his mothers, including his stepmothers, and then he goes into the queen's palaces, and the queens, in their great love for Krishna, because they want to love Krishna in that way, they're very, very shy. So they don't go running to him, they don't go running to him and embrace him like that. They're very, very shy and cultured. So first they send their sons forward to embrace him, Krishna. Then they embrace him in their hearts. They're very shy. And then Krishna deals with them just like a king or a deals with his queen, and a husband deals with his wife. He deals with them. So we can understand that the combination of the living entity's deep love and deep desire to love Krishna in that way, that combined with yogamaya causes them to forget Krishna's actual position. And then think of Krishna as my husband, even though he is the husband, but he's also a billion other things too. But what causes Krishna to reciprocate in that way? So so we can understand clearly what causes the living entities who are in that position, persons who are in that position, to think the way they do. But what causes Krishna to act just like a husband or the king? That he's actually controlled, he's overcome, he's forced in a sense. In a sense, he's forced by the devotion, by the bhakti, the intense bhakti of his devotees. For the same reason, not forced in the sense of it forces him, literally, but forced in the sense of the same reason why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed all those times, although he wanted, you know, he didn't go to Jagannath Puri, then he didn't go to South India, then he didn't go to Vrindavan. Force, this is the nature of love. It's very powerful. It's the most powerful thing. And it is so powerful that it controls even the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the love of his devotees. And it's so powerful because it gives the recipient, the Vishaya, the object of the love, it gives the object of the love so much pleasure. He's controlled by it. And this, it's so powerful, this love of Krishna is so powerful that Krishna himself, as we were speaking of already, he wants to taste it. He wants to understand it. How is it so powerful? Wait a second, I'm God. I'm the Supreme Controller. How is it controlling me? How is it evoking from me so much potency that I become controlled by it, that I'm forced to do what they say? I'm forced to be tied, bound by the ropes of Mother Yasoda. I'm forced to do all these things. What is it? And not only am I forced, but it brings me so much happiness. And it brings out these special qualities in me. So he wants to find out about that love. It's what is that love? What is it? Its glory? What is it? What is it experience like? How does it pull things? He wants, and therefore he comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is so overwhelmed by tasting love of Krishna, whom he is Krishna, but in that mood, he's tasting it. He's so overwhelmed. His heart is melting, and he's being so magnanimous and giving it away. It's like when a very, very wealthy man who doesn't have any children, and finally in his old age he has a son and he has all his wealth, and everyone knows that's the time to come to him and ask him for a favor, whatever they want, give me this, give me that, because his heart is melted. Because he's so happy, his heart's overflowing, so he's giving away, what do you want? Because his heart is overflowing, so Mahaprabhu, his heart is overflowing. So he's giving away something that's very, very, very secret. And he's overflowing even more than the rich man, in that without even asking for that thing, he's giving it. Take it. We don't want it. We want something else. We want something of this world. We want nothing. Or we want just freedom from all the crazy miseries of Kali Yuga. But Mahaprabhu says, no, take this. So instead of taking from God, we give to God. Here, eat this, or you'll die. Eat nicely. In this way, Krishna, although the proprietor of everything, depends on the mercy of his devotee. This is a uniquely high level of friendship in which the devotee actually believes himself to be the father or mother of Krishna, and Krishna believes himself to be the son of such a father and mother. However, Lord Chaitanya's greatest gift, so remember, this is Prabhupada speaking to the ladies and gentlemen at 26 Second Avenue in 1966. He's giving them he's trying to explain to them, we're from a different culture, a different religious background. He's explaining to them the unique gift of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And now he's going to give the, bring it to the highest point. However, Lord Chaitanya's greatest gift was his teaching that Krishna can be treated as one's lover. In this relationship, the Lord becomes so much attached to his devotee that he expresses his inability to reciprocate. Krishna was so obliged to the gopis, the cowherd girls of Vrindavan, that he felt unable to return their love. "I cannot repay your love," he told them. "Aparyeham. I have no more assets to give." Devotional service on this highest, most excellent platform of lover and beloved, which had never been given by any previous incarnation or acharya, was given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, Krishnadas Kaviraj, quoting Srila Rupa Goswami, writes in the fourth verse of his book, "Lord Chaitanya is Krishna in a yellow complexion, and he is Sachinandana, the son of Mother Sachi. He is the most charitable personality because he came to deliver Krishna Prema. Unalloyed love for Krishna to everyone. May you always keep him in your hearts. It will be easy to understand Krishna through him." So that's the Kandaras Puritova Satyanandana. Keep him, the golden form of Mahaprabhu, always in your heart, and he will remove all the ignorance, and it will be easy to understand Krishna through him. Through his mercy, through his instructions, through his example, his teachings, be easy to understand Krishna through him. Prabhupada continues. We have often heard the phrase love of God. How far this love of God can actually be developed can be learned from the Vaishnava philosophy. Theoretical knowledge of love of God can be found in many places and in many scriptures, but what that love of Godhead actually is and how it is developed can be found in the Vaishnava literatures. It is the unique and highest development of love of God. It is the unique and highest development of love of God that is given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Even so, this Chaitanya Charitamrita is going to explain all these things in great detail. In great detail. And Mahaprabhu himself is going to not tell us, but demonstrate as he is tasting it himself. He's going to demonstrate what it is like to be experiencing the most intense love of God that is possible, the love for Krishna that is experienced by Srimati Radharani. He's going to taste that, and he has tasted that in Jagannath Puri in the final years of his manifest pastimes, and Srirup Damodar and Raghunath Das Goswami have recorded it. They were personally present. They recorded it in their diaries. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has heard from Raghunath Das, and it's going to be presented towards the end of the book in the last four or five perhaps chapters. And it is quite astounding. Quite astounding. And the theoretical basis of that will be explained when by Ramananda Roy, but in the eighth chapter of Madhya Lila, and Sanatana Goswami teachings perhaps too, but especially in the final chapters of Chaitanya Charitamrita, the farthest limit of love of God, of Mahabhava, tasting the mood of Srimati Radharani will be exhibited and tasted by Mahaprabhu, and we will have the fortune, if we study this book carefully and if we are so qualified, we will have the fortune of tasting even a small drop of this, and that small drop is sufficient as somewhere in Chaitanya Charitamrita, I believe it said, that a small drop is sufficient to drown the world. One drop from that ocean of devotional service is sufficient to drown the world. So this is the unique and highest development of love of God that is given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Even in this material world, we can have a little sense of love. How is this possible? It is due to the presence of our original love of God. Whatever we find within our experience within this conditioned life is situated in the Supreme Lord, who is the supreme source of everything. In our original relationship with the Supreme Lord, there is real love, and that love is reflected pervertedly through material conditions. Our real love is continuous and unending. But because that love is reflected pervertedly in this material world that lacks continuity and is inebriating. If okay, get out the dictionary, we'll find out exactly what it means. Because we know it, if someone is inebriated, we know what that means. It's huh? It has another meaning, though. That's why you. Do you have a dictionary handy? Yeah. But yes, but we can see it's intoxicating. It doesn't. The love of this material world is. It doesn't bring us closer to the actual reality, and it's not continuous. It's temporary. It's temporary because. That's in the material. We can experience love in the material world, but
it's different, continuous and lacking continuity.
Yes.
Then it says unending. It's the second.
No. It's probably. It's. Wait. Excuse me. Just wait 1 second. A real love is continuous and unending.
Yes.
So that's. Yes, but because that love is reflected perverted in the material world, lacks continuity, so it ends all the time and is inebriating, it's intoxicating, the love of this material world.
Inebriating is not intoxicating.
Yeah. No, it's like a destroyer, isn't it?
It's weakening.
Weakening or something.
Weakening.
If someone's inebriated, we say that, but let's see. Well, now we'll consult the authority.
First meaning is to make drunk.
Okay, so intoxication.
Is to disorder the senses of.
Yes.
Or to exhilarate as if by liquor, deprive of sense and judgment.
Yeah. So basically, it's intoxicating, but not the way we. In other words, it brings them further from the love of this material world. It lacks continuity because it's not eternal. It ends when the body ends, at best. And it doesn't bring us closer to Krishna in and of itself, unless we see it as a reflection, a perverted reflection of the actual rasa with Krishna in the spiritual world. And real love is continuous and unending. Thank you. If we want real transcendental love, we have to transfer our love to the supreme lovable object, Krishna, the supreme personality of Godhead. This is the basic principle of Krishna consciousness. In material consciousness, we are trying to love that which is not at all lovable. We give our love to cats and dogs and Goebbels
and squirrels
and what? guinea pigs.
What are gerbils?
You don't know what a gerbil is? Do you know what a gerbil is? Get out the book. it's a little rodent.
Okay.
It's like a guinea pig, but it's less. It's
lovable.
It's very and soft-centered.
Yeah, and birds and fish and pet snakes.
Pet alligators.
Wicked miserly men. Yes, especially wicked miserly men. Who are worse than alligators. But if we don't give our love to Krishna, this is Bhagavan speaking, and we don't give our love to miserable, miserly men and alligators and fish and pet something or others, we'll be very, very lonely in this world. So the solution is to give our love to Krishna, because everyone is longing for loving relationships. We long for loving relationships. So in the material world, when we get tired of the fruitlessness, the lack of sweetness, the exploitativeness of material relationships, we become hard and crusty and cynical, which also isn't satisfying. But we have to give our love to Krishna. In material consciousness, we are trying to love that which is not at all lovable. We give our love to cats and dogs, etc., running the risk that at the time of death, we may think of them and consequently take birth in a family of cats or dogs. Our consciousness at the time of death determines our next life. That is one reason why the Vedic scriptures stress the chastity of women. If a woman is very much attached to her husband, at the time of death she will think of him, and in the next life she will be promoted to a man's body.
Become a miserable, miserly man.
I won't rub it in. I'll just continue. Prabhupada said, generally a man's life is better than a woman's, because a man usually... What does it say? Does it have the generally and usually in there? Or is this a compromise put in by the editors? Does it say the general... What's the sentence in there in the unedited version?
I can't see anything.
Yeah, even if it was there, you couldn't see it in there.
Not here at all.
Really? The generally?
What paragraph
in? But Krishna consciousness is so nice. Is that just the next line? If a woman is very much attached to her husband at the time of death, is that there?
Mm-hmm.
No? Oh, I guess he's put in something from the original transcripts, that means. No, I was probably...
Where did it go from then? What is this?
Where?
In the altar. It will show you. But love that does not have Krishna as its object leads downward. It is not that Krishna or God is something obscure or something that only a few chosen people can attain. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu informs us that in every country and every scripture there is...
Oh, so it skips this whole part he's put it in, because this must have been in the original.
Yeah.
So there's a whole big part missed out there.
Yeah. That's the whole part. A man usually has better facilities for understanding the spiritual science. But Krishna consciousness is so nice. So here, so that when they pull out that part, they pull out the balancing point that Prabhupada puts in here too. But Krishna consciousness is so nice that it makes no distinction between man and woman. In the Bhagavad Gita 9:32, Lord Krishna says, anyone who takes shelter of me, whether a woman, Sudra, Vaishya, or anyone else of low birth, is sure to achieve my association. This is Krishna's guarantee.
So there was something in there that
No, but Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu informs us that in every country, so that's in there,
mm-hmm.
and in every scripture there is some hint of love of God. Chaitanya? But no one knows what love of God actually is. The Vedic scriptures, however, are different in that they can direct the individual in the proper way to love God. Other scriptures do not give information on how one can love God, nor do they actually define or describe what or who the Godhead actually is. Although they officially promote love of God, they have no idea how to execute it. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives a practical demonstration of how to love God in a conjugal relationship. Taking the part of Srimati Radharani, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tried to love Krishna as Radharani loved him. Krishna was always amazed by Radharani's love. How does Radharani give me so much pleasure, he would ask. In order to study Radharani, Krishna lived in her role and tried to understand himself. This is the secret of Lord Chaitanya's incarnation. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna, but he has taken the mood and role of Radharani to show us how to love Krishna. Thus the author writes in the fifth verse, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord, who is absorbed in Radharani's thoughts. So then Prabhupada will discuss the fifth verse, and we shall read this tomorrow. So the fourth verse was, Mahaprabhu, who's giving this highest relationship with Krishna, the conjugal relationship of love of God especially, may he be, always be manifest in the core of your heart and dispel all ignorance. And the fifth verse is now describing Radha Krishna Pranaya Vakritya Ladini Shakti Asmad. About the loving affairs between Radha and Krishna and how these two have become one. Radha and Krishna have become one. So Prabhupada has given us some introductory sentences on that. And now we'll hear more about that, Krishna willing, tomorrow. So Prabhupada has gone right in and explained it. And then after the fifth, there's a sixth verse, and that will be the introductory verses, texts on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments?
You mentioned how there are two kinds of mayas, and they both allow one to feel independent.
Yes.
So, when one is advancing from the independent feelings to the existing being under the influence of the Mahamaya, Maya here, towards this other type of independence that comes from the other Maya, how can we identify the feelings of independence?
They're the influence of the other, of Mahamaya.
But I'm saying as we're advancing.
No, they're the influences of.
No, we know that now, but as it's progressing.
It's like this. But the transit is completely tangible. It's not mental. We are sheltered by either one of those two energies.
Okay.
So the stage of Bhava Bhakti is when one gains the shelter.
Mm-hmm.
Of the internal energy.
So it's not a process of...
No.
But I know some places it is described like that, as a process of devotional...
Yeah, devotional increasing. Mm-hmm. But this point of when one is actually under the shelter of the internal energy is a specific point that's Bhava Bhakti.
And the other question I had was, you were saying about the sun.
Is that clear?
Sort of. I mean, when I say sort of, it is clear, but it does still seem to me that there's got to be some, you know, like, I think it's an instrument place, like scale of the sound that goes up.
For what goes down?
One's material consciousness.
Right.
One's spiritual consciousness goes down.
Yes. So, and then when it's at a point of a shakti, when you're feeling completely dependent on Krishna's mercy to bring you into your actual Sarup.
Yes, I can accept, understand what you're saying. You're saying when you get formally, you get yourself.
No, you actually, not formally, but you actually.
But like formally, you know, it's like. But because there's.
Now one is in the external energy and longing for the shelter of the internal energy. So that's part of the process, that longing.
The inspiration one gets to do something devotionally, one feels like suddenly to do some devotional act, that's not the sense of Mahamaya.
No, but you're under the shelter of Mahamaya.
In that terminology, I mean, in that concept.
You're sheltered by the living entity is trying to get out of Maya. That's what we say, he's trying to get out of Maya. And they're struggling to catch that shelter. Sometimes by Krishna's grace, he gives us some hints of something, but we're still trapped by the illusory energy of the Lord and we can't get out. We identify with the body, we identify with the mind, some illumination comes by grace or something every once in a while, and we're basically under the shelter of the illusory energy. So therefore we try to make sure we follow the Shastra and the guidance that we're given from above.
Another question related to the example you gave of the sun and having the back to the sun, it's your own shadow. And then you were talking about if you turn around, but if you think of that, I don't know whether it's just a pedantic thing, but if you turn around, you don't see yourself, you see the sun.
But
so how do you actually, what is
but you see the
what
sun.
Is the example of
and if you see
yourself, because how do, or does that analogy just not encompass that?
Yeah,
that
it means something else. The analogy is. Talking about that. But when you look towards Krishna, you're in the light, you're not in the shadow. And that's the point. That's the point of that. But you don't see the shadow. There's no shadow world there when you look towards Krishna.
From the shelter of Mahamaya to the shelter of Yogamaya appears to be an evolutionary process.
Meaning gradual?
Yeah, it is. As you keep on, your consciousness becoming, getting more and more cleansed, you are under the shelter of Yogamaya more and more. So, but still, some will remain till you become perfected.
I would say that the influence of the internal energy is greater, but thinking about it in these terms, which are the terms we're speaking about, that we're in fact sheltered by the external energy in the terms that we're talking about it. Is that different from what you're saying?
Well, even the external energy starts helping, pushing you up towards the internal energy. That's the evolution. It starts helping you. Because this is also service of the same Lord.
Yeah.
And
the
he will help.
The external energy is always helping.
Yeah,
it's always pushing. But the difference is, for a devotee, there's enough consciousness of what the purpose of the misery is.
There's a prayer to Yogamaya, but there's a prayer like that about making that shift.
What are you looking in?
There's a prayer to Yogamaya.
What are you looking in?
When will you show your mercy to me by lifting up the curtain of illusion with which you shroud the universe in your external form as Mahamaya? I've heard of your glories and activities from the Vedic literatures. You take all those souls who are averse to Krishna and bind them within the material world. That person whose good fortune gradually dawns, allowing him to again become favorably disposed towards Krishna, you reward liberation and make him free from all grief and fear. Oh, my dear mother, showing your causeless mercy to this servant, give me a place in Vrindavan, for you are Yogamaya herself. Without complying with you, no soul at any time can get Krishna, for the manifestation of Krishna's pastimes is enacted by your mercy.
By your, he means Mahamaya?
Yogamaya.
Oh, Yogamaya, when will you show your mercy to be my devotee at the curtain?
Right.
And then he says, you are the devoted follower of Krishna and you are the mother of the universe. You have shown me the transcendental touchstone of Krishna consciousness. My dear mother, I sincerely wish that you will let my faith in the Vaishnavas increase at every moment. Without the lotus feet of the devotees of the Lord, Bhakti Vinod is not able to cross to the other side of this ocean.
So there are certain things that are in this, even though they're in this world, such as the holy, seem to be in this world, such as the holy name, the Shastra, the deities, the dharms, and devotees, that they carry with them. They're inherently composed of spiritual energy, internal energy. So by touching those things, it affects us. If we touch them carefully and gently, it affects us very positively. It's like some of that energy is transferred to our hearts, and then gradually, and perhaps this is what we'll say, gradually the heart is becoming more full with that desire, that energy, spiritual energy, which means desire. And when it's overwhelming, I want that, I don't want this anymore, but yet here I am, please give me your shelter, then by the grace of Krishna, by the grace of Yogamaya, then our shelter is transferred. Okay. 10 to 9.
I'll just read it as it is. It was the morning after Ekadasi, which was Ekadasi I wrote. To the dear souls who ever so humbly make every effort to serve so purely, Sri Radha Gopinath Sama, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
They're powerful.
Yeah, they're quite.
That's why I told them they can't
see us at the bottom. Yeah, they
just come to take the view of the night.
They change it.